Blog Talk Radio.
When I wake up, well, I know I'm gonna be young. I'm gonna see the man who wakes up to
you. Good morning, it's 6:06. Kelly O'Connell, and I've got a few changes. Number one, I'm broadcasting again on Blog Talk. I used Google Phone to call in and make the connection, and then they had changed something. It took me a few days to figure it out. Of course, given my limited knowledge of tech, I'm lucky it got figured out at all. And then we've got a new call screener, Bill. We've imported him from the Philippines from a call center, so you'll be happy to know you can call in while I'm blabbing to somebody else or playing a song, and just speak slowly. He just speaks to Tagalog, you know. But all right, so we've got a show today that I had meant to play before. The interview with Steve Pierce, and I'm going to I'm going to play that, but I'm going to go over a few things first for you. Let's do a few headlines to prime the pump here. And by the way, 523-1450 if you want to test Bill's English, his limited English skills. And also 805-6180 is the number to text in, as you know. All right, so we've got a replacement of the CEO of McDonald's, believe it or not. McDonald's is in free fall. And, you know, it's the first time there's a McDonald's in town. I went by it, I don't know, a couple months ago now, I guess. There was nobody in the parking lot. And I was like, holy cow, I've never seen that at a McDonald's before. So I guess something had to give. It's a big problem. But maybe they'll, I'm sure they'll be able to right the ship. I think they've got so many different, you know, stores around the world that, you know, they've got to be able to get everything right. If McDonald's is really the company that set the standard for fast food. So, all right. So now here's the Attorney General nominee, Loretta Lynch, and believe it or not, she's not a coal miner's daughter. She's apparently the product of communists. Check this one out.
The president's action would give people who came.
She is talking. They're vetting her for. The Senate is vetting her to take over for the Justice Department for Eric Holder, who is. I wonder what he's going to do when he gets out of office. Maybe go door to door and pass out tracts of, you know, something like the Communist Manifesto. Anyway, check this out.
Here unlawfully, the right to work, the right to participate in Social Security and Medicare, when Congress has not done that, allows them to stay for at least a period lawfully. Let me ask you this. In the workplace of America today, when we have a high number of unemployed, we've had declining wages for many years. We have the lowest percentage of Americans working. Who has more right to a job in this country? A lawful immigrant who's here, a green card holder, or a citizen, or a person who entered the country unlawfully?
Well, Senator, I believe that the right and the obligation to work is one that's shared by everyone in this country, regardless of how they came here. And certainly if someone is here, regardless of status, I would prefer that they be participating in the workplace than not participating in the workplace.
All people in this country have the right to work. Everybody. It doesn't matter if you're here legally or illegally. So that is her take. That's going to be her Justice Department. I assume she's going to get voted in. I mean, it would be interesting if she didn't get it voted in my opinion. Government tells agents to ID those illegals not to be deported. So you've got the president deciding on a personal basis, of course, which people are going to stay or leave, not based on the law, but based on his decree. All right. EPA chief Aspen's climate could be a lot like that of Amarillo, Texas in 2100. What are these people going to get over this? We've just been told that we've got the snowiest decade behind us. The last 10 years is the snowiest decade on on record. We've got cold records that have been being set every single season. We just had the storm in which they screwed it up, but it was supposed to be New York City's worst storm. What do people think when they see cold records being set? You know, they don't think of global warming. They think of climate change. There is no such thing as climate change. I was telling you this earlier. You could say that there's global warming, but climate by definition changes, or weather does. Millions to Obamacare tax penalty. Zuckerberg, the owner of Facebook, is not going to, after saying that he would support the cartoonists in France, is not going to allow their cartoons to be put up. Blasphemous artwork is removed from Paris exhibition. Egyptian poet goes on trial for insults. That's what you get when you have Islam making the rules. You have a fallback to what it was like to live in a country 2,000 years ago. You have it, you know, one of the great achievements in the history of mankind is religious tolerance, and the people that were behind that were John Locke. He was raised in a Puritan household. He's considered the most influential philosopher of the modern era, and he wrote a letter concerning toleration, which became a foundational guidepost for religion. We have a country where we decide the ballots privately. We keep our political opinions, unless we're going to put them on talk radio or something like that. But we don't go in the street and fight over them like they do in other parts of the world. We have our religious convictions that are private, and it's a pluralistic model. Islam is, and we got to be clear here. Islam is coming. Any place that it established itself, it's going to have religious laws, not religious freedom. And you can say, well, that's the terrorists. No, it's not the terrorists. It is, as a matter of fact, it is the people that would establish a religious country. It's basically Islam is, there's no difference between Islam and in the religion as the political system. This is just a fact. And so we got some important questions that, I've been trying to bring up to us so we can discuss them. All right. So those are a few of the headlines. New Air Force One, maybe the last jumbo jet, is another one. And let me play one more thing for you that I found to be absolutely shocking. What was said in this statement by the White House's assistant communication secretary? It's not Josh Earnest. It's some guy named I think Isaac Schultz or something. But let's listen to this and then some commentary by Krauthammer. It's absolutely astounding what this White House is trying to dodge any statements about Islam whatsoever. Check this out.
At the White House today, there was a lot of talk about Jordan, saying they would negotiate with ISIS, releasing a would-be bomber who was captured for a Jordanian pilot. The White House said through a spokesman that they would not, the U.S. would not do that. That brought up questions about the Taliban Five, who were released for Bo Bergdahl, and that produced this exchange.
How is what the Jordanians are talking about doing any different than what the United States did to get the release of Bergdahl?
Releasing prisoners held at Guantanamo Bay to the Taliban, which is clearly a terrorist organization.
Prisoner swaps are a traditional end-of-conflict interaction that happens as the war in Afghanistan wound down. We felt like it was the appropriate thing to do. The president's bedrock commitment as commander-in-chief is to leave no man or woman behind. That's the principle he was operating under.
Isn't that what the Jordanians are operating under?
Well, I mean, John, the
Taliban is still conducting terrorist attacks, so you can't really say that the war has ended as far as they're concerned.
Well, I'd also point out that the Taliban is an armed insurgency. ISIL is a terrorist group, so we don't make concessions to terrorist groups. We feel
the Taliban terrorist group.
I don't think that the Taliban, is an armed insurgency. This was the winding down of the war in Afghanistan, and that's why this arrangement was dealt.
The Taliban is an armed insurgency, not a terrorist group. Back with the panel, Charles.
It slits throats, it attacks buses, it drives car bombs into markets, and it's not a terrorist group. Look, you can't parody this administration. The idea that the United States would not do this is preposterous. Of course we do. And also the idea that the war is winding down. Tell that to anybody who lives in Afghanistan. This is a fantasy. Obama's pretended that the war on terror, the war in Afghanistan, the war in Iraq are all winding down and the wars are all back. So, I mean, this is sort of embarrassing. The issue for the Jordanians is they are a miraculous ally in the region. They have been our friend and stable for 50 years in a region where regimes last a week and a half. But they are extremely pressured by ISIS, by their internal opposition, by the Muslim Brotherhood inside of Jordan, and yet it joined our coalition. If it has to make a swap to recover a pilot, do it.
Okay.
And you can't disagree with that. Okay, folks, we've been doing alt country, and I've got a lady here that I played before. It's Jillian Welch, and with she and her partner, just absolutely stunning. This is from BBC. It's called the, and we do have a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Greg.
Yeah, Greg. Hey, what's going on?
Hey, man. That's nothing short of stunning by that audio that you played. If you get a chance, you might want to pull up the Kelly file last night when she had Wesley Clark, the retired general, on.
Yeah.
And it was mind-boggling to see this retired general deflect direct questions to him, and he would answer the questions concerning Islam. It's all Islam. It's not radical Islam. It's pure Islam.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's the problem that we've got here. Are we willing to take on a billion and plus people? I mean, it's a real problem here because you've got certain elements of Islam that are willing to fight and die at the drop of a hat. You've got a lot of other people in Islam that will support these people. Then you undoubtedly have individuals that don't support violence. How do you separate them out, though?
You can't, because the ones that are not talking are just waiting to become the majority like they have been throughout history.
Well, we still have a choice in the matter, and it is, I'm of the opinion we need to tighten up our policy. I mean, we can't go on like we're going right now. What the answer is or what it's going to look like, I don't know. But the more attacks they launch, the sharper the response is going to be, because the people themselves are going to rise up and demand to be protected.
I pray that that's true, Kelly. I'll let you go. Have a great day.
Have a great day, Greg. All right, folks. Good points by Greg. I don't claim to have the answer to Islam, but I'll tell you one thing. I'll guarantee you our response now is absolutely insane and is not going to work to protect the American people. Just not. Jillian Welch, Revelator, BBC. Kelly O'Connell, 620. We got our own call screener. I grabbed that one before he could, but check this out, and we'll then go to break. Here, and good morning to you. It is the 29th of January. We're just kind of burning through the days, and I looked for that clip of Clark. I might try to play it for the next hour, but there is a problem that the modernity, the modern age has with religion. It doesn't understand religion. It doesn't really try to. It lumps all religions in together. And it is, says we all, we all worship the same God, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, we don't. Of all the wars in the last 50 years, almost every single one of them have included at least one Muslim group, one Muslim side. Islam cannot play well with others, to put it in the kindergarten terms. All right, here is this interview that I did with Steve that I thought... Well, I enjoyed it, of course, but I thought it came out pretty well. You can give me your response. We'll pick through this and then get some feedback from you as well. While I'm playing the interview, I'm not going to take calls, but I will take them at the break if you want. Anyway, this is from the 18th. So this is it's about 10 days old. Check this out. Folks, good afternoon to you. Well, good morning to you. It's Kelly here, and I've got Steve Pierce in for a, you know, I'm having the same problem that I had before, so which was I couldn't hear it over the air. So let us, and I'll see if I can, must be some button that's not coming through, which I don't understand. But anyway, be that as it may, let's do a little more live show here. All right, so I find it astounding that the government, our government, refuses to really deal with this issue of Islam the way they are, to pretend that we're not going to be in the middle of this thing. We are enemy number one to these people, because not so much because we're infidels, although we are infidels, we're unbelievers, but it is, you know, the upshot is that we're the number one driver that keeps Islam from spreading out and establishing themselves. For example, that we do this in keeping them from taking over Israel. You know, if they took over Israel, there would be millions of people slaughtered. If they wouldn't subjugate them, you know, there would just be a lot of deaths. So, you know, I don't know how else to explain it. When in, you know, when George Bush Sr. went in and did the original Desert Storm, they found plans from the Muslims that were, when I say the Muslims, from the Iraqis, who they had made plans to go, and they were going to take all the men in Kuwait, which was several million, and kill them, put them to death. And then they were going to take the, you know, the women and turn them into, you know, concubines. The children were going to be enslaved. You might say, well, that's ridiculous. No one would ever plan that. That is the Islamic law of war. It's the same thing that ISIS is doing right now. This is totally foreign to us because we didn't grow up in this culture. So anyway, here's a little more from Krauthammer.
You know, Charles, as we've talked about, words matter. How you say something matters. Here is the Secretary of State in Davos talking about the terrorist threat just a couple days ago.
Today we are witnessing nothing more than a form of criminal anarchy, a nihilism which illegitimately claims an ideological and religious foundation. Obviously, the biggest error that we could make would be to blame Muslims collectively for crimes not committed by Muslims alone, crimes that the overwhelming majority of Muslims oppose, crimes that their faith utterly rejects, and that Muslim leaders themselves have the greatest ability to address.
Thoughts about that?
Well, the biggest error that we can make, well, it would be an error if we blamed all the Muslims in the world for the crimes that are occurring, including the latest one today. In Libya, for example, it would be an error, but I'm not sure how many people in this country actually say that. That's just a straw man. I mean, everyone who's critical of radical Islam prefaces in saying, of course, it's a minority of Islam. It's not a way to attack all Muslims. So this is a non-argument that he's making. And it wouldn't be the biggest error that we make. The biggest error that we make is to lose the damn war because we refuse to recognize who the enemy is and what it requires. That would be a larger error because it would consign people to, for example, the hell that is Syria today, approaching now 250,000 dead. And the original sin here is not that Obama sort of is confused. I think he is in a way. But that he has a strategy. He came into office with a strategy. America leaves. This is not something that we should be involved in. We will leave, and he didn't quite understand, which is sort of an axiom of geopolitics, if America leaves, the vacuum does not remain a vacuum. There's a story in the front page of the Wall Street Journal today about the sort of the comedy of errors of our supposedly equipping, arming, and training the Syrian rebels. They started about almost 2 years ago. They have gotten nowhere. There was no impetus. There was no urgency. There was no logic behind what the president was doing. Everybody understood that he himself said and thought it was a fantasy. So he says it's a fantasy, and then he says he's going to arm them. This is a president who believes in withdrawal, and these are the fruits of withdrawal.
Moderate Muslim.
It's stunning to watch someone so adrift from reality as the president. In the meantime, his numbers are coming back up, and I think that one of the reasons that his numbers are coming up is I think it's because he's still cocky. He's still, you know, he still acts like he's in control of his own destiny.
That is
in control of everything.
With discussing it and
the fact
making
is now that he's lost the House and the Senate, which is due to him. It's due to his policies. He begged everybody, come on in, let's make this about my policies. And it turned out to be about his policies, and he didn't like it. But now he acts, because he's doing these executive actions, thing like, you know, he's totally, he's broken off from the government, and he's, you know, like he's this, it's really strange. It's like he sees himself as a rebel leader. It's like he's living in the jungle, you know, making demands to the government and forcing the government to bend to his will. It's very bizarre, and I think it just goes to show you the communist mindset cannot fit into a democracy. It just can't. 523-1450, or should I say Marxist? But anywhere, here is the wife of Greenspan, which is Andrea Mitchell, and she's going to say how this, you know, just kind of weird our policy is too, or the statements of the president.
Body that is tasked with discussing it and making decisions about it, Congress, has yet to take up the issue of ISIS or have a vote on it or our campaign against it. I mean, do you think there is any sort of movement in Washington towards that?
There is. I think that what the president proposed in the State of the Union to have an authorization of the use of force will be taken up, and especially with John McCain now as chair of the Senate Armed Services Committee, they actually will probably come together on the ground rules. But what is very striking, and this gets to what you and Sam and Evan have been talking about, is that in the present State of the Union address, he said that there has been progress in rolling back ISIS and in Iraq and Syria. Now, perhaps there has been some progress in Iraq. That's debatable as to whether the Iraqi troops are stood up. They're not ready yet to try to take back Mosul. There certainly has been no progress in Syria. I'm not sure what the president meant to even say that there was progress in Syria, because Aleppo, Raqqa, there's no progress in the cities of Syria. ISIS still controls that territory. And as Evan was just saying, this is a town, Kobani, which is not even completely declared verifiably to be out of ISIS control. And it is on the Syrian, on the Turkish-Syrian border. You know, you can walk across. It's not, if it were safe enough to walk across, this is not part of ISIS territory.
Yeah, Sam, I mean, the question of the authorization of the use of military force is a thorny one, and I think we focus a lot on how Republicans deal with sort of foreign policy and the isolationist wing of the party. It is also a complicated issue for Democrats. Adam?
All right, so, I mean, we're not getting the job done over there, and you can just call it fate or whatever, but we're not. It's just, we need a new plan. And I think we probably, before we really get a handle on this, we're going to need a new leader. It just that the president is hard to predict. He's contradictory. He battles against his allies, and he tries to make peace with the enemies. The Taliban just released a statement and said we will behead the president. So he's, if he was trying to make friends with the radical Muslims, he's not achieving anything. 6:33, Kelly O'Connell. I'll work on that interview, but here's Jillian Welch, and we'll be back in just a minute. 523-1450.
But who could know if I'm a traitor?
Good morning, folks. It's 637-523-1450 to call in on KOBE. I'm going to give the Pierce interview another shot right now. It's a special show. It is a Sunday afternoon here, and Steve's staff contacted me and said, let's make magic happen again. And so we decided to we would catch up. We'd like to catch up with Steve, and I cannot hear it. I can't hear it coming through my my external speakers. So I'm just going to assume that we'll have to do it on maybe next hour if I can't figure this. We'll just try it next hour. Okay. So in the interim, I wanted to point out to you. By the way, this is something that the president has said. Now, the president is in a fight with the prime minister of Israel. He doesn't apparently like the president or the prime minister of Israel, Bibi Netanyahu, who's a war hero and a very intelligent guy. He doesn't like him, and he's not going to meet with him when he's coming to Washington, D.C., which is extremely bizarre. This president is so petulant. He's so childish. I just think that he's got a different set of values, which is why so many people in this country never feel a connection to this guy. But here he's explaining that the reason that he's not going to do anything with Bibi is because they are having an election and it would be inappropriate. I mean, that would be, to me, that would make as much sense as saying he has a peanut allergy and we don't want to, affect that. That's just stupid. I'm convinced that this administration tries to come up with stuff at times that is absurd so that people say to themselves, I can't figure out what's going on, Here's an interview with Fareed Zakaria.
It was announced that the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is going to come to Washington and do a joint session of Congress at the invitation of the Republican Speaker of the House. Many people are saying this is a rebuttal of your arguments about negotiations with Iran, or the possible deal with Iran. Do you think it's appropriate for him to come in this manner at this time to Washington?
Well, I'll let Mr. Boehner answer that and Mr. Netanyahu. I speak with Prime Minister Netanyahu all the time. We're declining to meet with him. I'm declining to meet with him simply because our general policy is we don't meet with any world leader 2 weeks before their election. I think that's inappropriate. And that's true with some of our closest allies. David Cameron, who's got an election coming up, recently came to visit because we insisted that if he wants to come, and it was a very important meeting, he needs to be far away enough from the election that it doesn't look like in some ways we're meddling or putting our thumbs on the scale. To the broader issue, Fareed, I don't think there's been any rebuttal of my argument. I haven't heard a persuasive rebuttal of my argument that we crafted very effective sanctions against Iran specifically to bring them to the negotiations table to see if we could resolve the Iranian nuclear issue through diplomatic means. By all accounts, including the accounts of Israeli intelligence, Iran has abided by the terms of this interim agreement. They have not advanced their nuclear program. They have actually rolled back their stockpiles of highly enriched uranium. And so we have lost nothing during this period of negotiations. Iran's program has not advanced, and we have the chance of providing a mechanism where we can verify that Iran doesn't have a nuclear weapon, and Iran has the ability over time to re-enter the community of nations as a responsible player. Now, I don't know that we're going to be able to get that done, but my argument is for the United States Congress to insist on imposing new sanctions that all our partners, as well as the Iranians, can interpret as a violation of the interim agreement. For us to undermine diplomacy at this critical time for no good reason is a mistake. And that what we need to do is to finish up this round of negotiations, put the pressure on Iran to say yes to what the international community is calling for. And what's been remarkable is the unity we've been able to maintain in the P5+1.
And see how things are going. And
Russia,
so I was planning on asking you how things
China,
were going in
D.C.
and then what the outlook is for New Mexico in the near future.
And first of all, kind fact, of what we're doing here in Rufus,
make sure that it's the Iranians' fault because they couldn't say yes to a reasonable deal. And so I haven't heard a good counter argument yet. I will veto legislation if it comes up that imposes additional sanctions. And by the way, what I've said to members of Congress and what I've said to the Israelis is the day after Iran walks away from a reasonable deal, the easiest thing for me to do in Congress is pass additional sanctions against Iran. It would take about 2 days for me to be able to assign a bill like that. So we have the ability to exert additional pressure, but it's important for us to show that we've exhausted every possible avenue of diplomatic resolution.
But if you listen,
folks, as you can hear, there's just seems to be a disconnect there in the policy. And you might say, well, the president just disagrees with Netanyahu, and John Boehner should not have brought Bibi Netanyahu over here. I think it was interesting to see. It was just very interesting to see how, number one, I think we need input from Israel. We cannot trust this administration to tell us about how Israel feels about their security and what's going on over there. And don't forget, they have rockets shot into their country all the time. Don't forget, there's a lot of Americans that live over there. Don't forget the total commitment that the Israelis have to our, us. And you might say, well, they're dedicated to us. They depend on us. Well, that's another point then, isn't it? They're totally dependent on us to help them from being wiped out from the sea of Muslims. And, what else can you say? But we've got to have a better relationship with them. And then you see that the Americans just treating them like redheaded stepchildren. All right, so we've got this very weird thing going on. I guess in a kind of a related matter, we have got a debate that's going on that I had mentioned to you about over this movie, The American Sniper. Michael Moore attacked the movie, and Seth Rogen attacked it and said it was, so. I always wonder about, people who are, people who make what would appear to be anti-American statements. Now, an anti-war statement isn't necessarily anti-American, but I always kind of wonder. It always makes me think that these people are, socialistic in their leanings, because it is this tenet of socialism that we need to have a world party, that we need to have a world government to run everything so that everything is done fairly. And that's what the communists were doing when the Soviet Union was taking over all these countries. Its goal was world communism. China was not as warlike, although they did get involved in Vietnam and other places. But that may have been because they didn't have the capability when Chairman Mao took them over. They were very agrarian. In any event, it was a tenet. And it's also a tenet of communism, Marxism, that the world will be taken over and then all wars will cease because the disagreement between the states will stop happening. And, I wonder if these people buy into this kind of rhetoric, because it is not a factual reality that the communists are going to take over and all wars are going to cease, what you would find is something akin to international Nazism. There would be very little difference based on how they ran their own countries. Kelly O'Connell, 647, and we'll take a little break here. Here's a little more Jillian Welch, and then I got the weather coming up for you. 523-1450 to call in, 805-6180 to text on KOBE. Las Cruces, we'll be right back. It's Kelly here. Good morning, 652. I found it bizarre when they criticized the people who supported the American Sniper. To me, the reason the American Sniper was popular is going to be Clint Eastwood's biggest movie, maybe his best movie. It's near $200 million, and it's only been out a few weeks. The reason it's popular, I think, is people are sick to death of America being attacked by the media, by the you know, academy, the universities, by Hollywood. They're just sick of it. They're sick of seeing something that they recognize to be special and unique in history, well-meaning, if not perfect by any means. But they're sick of this incessant anti-Americanism that the cheerleader of it appears to be Obama. They're sick of that. They want to have a chance to enjoy something that is not just an outright attack on America's character, our history, our intentions. And this movie comes along. And the interesting thing about this movie is it's not pro-war. It is one man's perspective on why he went over and went back time and again to succeed in this movie, or to succeed as a sniper to protect his brothers and sisters in the military. And you have these people like Howard Dean that are so committed. And Howard Dean is like the biggest demagogue I've ever heard. A demagogue is someone who finds what he wants, the conclusion that he wants other people to believe. He establishes the conclusion and argues backwards. I just can't stand this guy. But anyway, here he is talking about why he said only Tea Party people in a nutcase, right-wing nut jobs would support it.
Governor, you've been in the situation. Governor Dean, on Real Time with Bill Maher this week, you said people who go see this movie are people who are very angry. The actor Gary Sinise had a strong reaction to that. He wrote, quote, "You certainly have a right to make stupid blanket statements suggesting all people who see this film are angry, but how's that helpful, sir? Chris Kyle's story deserved to be told. It tells the story of the stress that multiple deployments have on one military family, a family representative of thousands of military families. It helps to communicate the toll that the war on terror has taken on our defenders." Your reaction?
Here's something which I've almost never done in politics. I'll apologize to the veterans. I haven't seen the movie, and I think I was wrong. I talked to a lot of people about it. I make no apologies to all the thousands.
Listen to that. That's so typical of these people. He has not seen the movie, but he's willing to get up. That is so classic. He's willing to stand up and makes, you know, definitive statements about it. It reminds me of going into Amazon Books and, you know, going through. I always try to look at the reviews before I order a book. I'll try to see, and I'll go to the negative reviews, because the negative reviews a lot of times will have very crucial information as to what might be wrong with a book, whatever. So often, if it's a book that some people might say is conservative, there'll be reviews in there trashing it, and you can tell that the person reviewing it has never read it. So this guy is just a quintessential hypocrite.
Thousands of right-wing nutjobs who have been twittering me with nasty language, but I do apologize to the veterans. We owe them. a lot, and I think this movie was much more nuanced than I thought.
But you'll not take the word nutbags back.
No, I don't have any use for the people who tweeted me all weekend and used a lot of bad language. They're chicken hawks, and I have no respect for them.
We don't like chicken
hawks. I do have respect.
Like Dick Cheney.
I have a lot of respect for the people who served this country, and I apologize.
Thank you, sir. Let's go.
He doesn't have any respect for the people who served the country. I mean, how can you make, you know what I'm saying? God, I just wish some of these people would just leave. I'm looking, there was another report, but anyway, this Michael Moore, you know, Michael Moore on the American Sniper, you know, Michael Moore of all people, all 350 pounds of him, which is a personal insult that I embrace. I just wonder about these people. Nothing would satisfy a lot of these people, the Pelosi's, the Harry Reid's, nothing would satisfy them outside of seeing America collapse. The end result of their policies would be the collapse of America. I've got another clip from John McCain.
Sheila, get TV America's rollover consultants on the horn.
Michael Moore.
I know.
Michael
take your
Moore
old 401k into an IRA.
How much right would
it,
Michael Moore
it.
Have to do
Whatever,
anti-government
Shannon.
For all the confidence
movies?
TD Ameritrade, you got this.
If he was living in a modern country,
saw,
they would kill that guy so fast. All right, check this out.
This new movie, American Sniper, but it's been causing a bit of a commotion, and I wanted to get your reaction. Michael Moore has been critical of the film, and he tweeted this. He said, "My uncle killed by a sniper in World War II. We were taught snipers were cowards. We'll shoot you in the back. Snipers aren't heroes, and invaders are worse." What did you think of that, and did you see the movie?
I haven't seen the movie yet, and I intend to see it as soon as possible. But sometimes when I hear an idiotic statement like that from someone like Michael Moore, I don't want to dignify it with a response because it's so outrageous. That's like saying we should not use airplanes, we should not use tanks, we should not use any other weapon. What does he want us to go back to hand-to-hand fighting? But the most important thing is that these brave young men, and they're the most highly skilled, save the lives of others of their comrades because they are able to neutralize or take out an enemy that's bent on destroying them.
That's it right there. I'll take you out with some Jillian Welch. Outrageous, you big fat pig. Michael Moore. We'll be back, folks. Kelly O'Connell, KOB. So you want to do this every day? Look at your hopes up there. Yeah, that's pretty cool. They're going to have a few good people in there. I respect that. Hey, if you got a clip that you had saved, Windows Media or whatever, audio, I can get a clip from YouTube or Red Foot Politics or whatever to play, but I can't get this. It's an interview with Steve Pearson. Maybe try writing it over with the no judges. I've already tried it. Thank you. Figured out. Good morning, it's Kelly O'Connell here, and trying to figure out how to run this interview that I have with Steve. I've never had a problem like this before, although there's always problems with these machines. You know, there's always something that happens. There's a board. Just to describe to you what the studio is like, I've got a board, and it's called an R55E, and it has about 10 different sections on it with a bunch of sliders and dials and buttons and stuff, and that's what puts the sound out over the air. And then I've got a couple of computers in here too. One of these days I think I'm going to start doing a podcast of this thing, but I'm going to see if I can get this interview to play with Steve right now. We'll just see if it makes it over the air. I don't hear anything, but folks, good afternoon to you. Well, good morning to you. It's Kelly here, and I've got Steve Pierce in for a. It's playing in the background, but I'll have to. It'll have to be done on another day. I'll have to get somebody else who has actually got some chops on all this stuff to help me out. And in the meantime, let us go to take a look at some of the stuff that's happening in the state. So we skip that initially. Mastermind of brutal New Mexico murder dies in prison is one of the things that is in the headlines, and that's from KOAT. I've got a little clip of that for you.
Don Chalmers Ford has three lots full of the best used cars in the region, with zero down and payments starting as low as $99 a month. Get the right price and the respect you've earned at Don Chalmers Ford in Rio Rancho today.
You know, I'm so bad I can't even. Now I've got to turn a light on my phone because I don't know how to turn up the the dial to make it more easier to read. So. Here we go. I cannot make any sense of the last clip there. All right, so I've got some text, but I didn't recognize any of the messages. All right, here is about this gentleman that just died, mastermind of brutal New Mexico murder, dies in prison. This is from KOAT. Check this out.
It was a case that sent shockwaves throughout the community when University of New Mexico student Linda Lee Daniels was abducted, raped, and murdered.
Now, 29 years after the crime, the mastermind behind the killing, Johnny Zinn, has died in prison. Target 7's Nancy Laughlin has more on the case that terrorized young women in Albuquerque.
Chuck, for anyone who lived here in 1986, this was a case that was devastating and unforgettable. 22-year-old Linda Lee Daniels, a student at UNM, had just finished grocery shopping in the Northeast Heights. A group of men were searching for a girl to star in a porn. They spotted Linda and followed her. Linda was in the driveway of her boyfriend's home near Mondano High School when they abducted her on January 12, 1986. Johnny Zinn, the stepson of a prominent local businessman, was the ringleader. The men who abducted Linda took her to a motel on Central where they raped her at knife point. For the next week, police were tracking the men after they used Linda's credit card. Those men, including Zinn, panicked. They took Linda to the Hamas Mountains, where they shot and killed her. Zinn was found guilty of first-degree murder and 18 other charges in Daniel's death. He died last week at a prison facility in Las Lunas. He was 74. A corrections department spokeswoman says because of confidentiality reasons, she is not allowed to say how Johnny Zinn died. Coming up at 10, we will hear from an investigator who worked on this case and get his reaction to the death of Johnny Zinn. Back to you.
As for the criminals in this case, Wallace Pierce is believed to be the one who fired the fatal shot. He was sentenced to 66 years. Sidney Slager pleaded guilty to rape and was sentenced to 3. James Scardacini was given a controversial immunity deal in exchange for his cooperation and served no prison time. He died in 1990.
The case against the man.
And they've got a new bill up there in Santa Fe. Two New Mexico lawmakers brought it forward to try to make it illegal for parents and others to smoke in any motor vehicle when a child is present. That's incredible. Democrat Representative Jeff Steinborn of Las Cruces introduced the measure earlier this week, and Senator Peter Wirth of Santa Fe is sponsoring the bill in the Senate. And so they're focusing on secondhand smoke, but I mean, did they really enforce that? So you couldn't smoke in a, if you're a smoker, you couldn't smoke in your car. You couldn't smoke a cigarette, a cigar, a pipe, or even an e-cigarette. All right, a report coming out of KRQE. 2,600 fugitives were nabbed in New Mexico last year, and they were accused of violating parole or probation. And the Department of Corrections claimed last week that the absconders were caught thanks to an aggressive team tapped with finding fugitives across the state. Very impressive, huh? 1,700 absconders are still on the run. I'll bet you everything in the deficit, the number is much higher. It has to be higher than that. 1,700, please. All right, well, let's take a little break here. And let me see if I've got a little bit of comedy for you. And I got a guy by the name of Brian Regan who's a clean comedian. Although you could
wow,
really
it's an honor to be
know
here.
About this stuff. But he's supposedly the funniest of comedians, even amongst other comedians. But check this out. And he was on David Letterman's show. But he is a funny guy.
Wow, it's an honor to be here. I don't want to start off by bragging, but it was my New Year's resolution to lose 20 pounds this year. We've only got 2 months left, and I've only got 30 pounds to go. 2 months. Just keep it going. I don't know anything about food, you know? I know people give weird advice about food. Whenever I go to the store, people say, Brian, you don't want to go grocery shopping when you're hungry because you'll end up buying the kind of food you want to eat when you're hungry. I don't know how to function. Brian, you don't want to go buy a car when you want to buy a car because you'll end up buying the kind of car you want to get when you want to buy a car. Yeah. Imagine driving home in a car like that, filled with the kind of groceries you want to eat. Be the laughing stock of the neighborhood. I'm trying, man. I don't know. I got a juicer. I got this big industrial juicer. You know, you put the fruit or the vegetable in here. Here's the spout. That's where the juice comes out. This side's the bad side. A bin and a clear lid. You don't want nothing over there. So the first thing I tried to make, this is true, was banana juice. Not knowing there's no moisture anywhere inside a banana. You can blend a banana, but you can't juice a banana. I didn't know this. So I put my first banana. Bam! Okay. Clearly there's a lag time here. Put the second. Bam! Right, I'm going to have to be patient. So I thought, well, maybe that's how juicing works. You know, maybe it takes a while for the machine to catch up. I fed 7 bananas in a row. When does that delicious banana nectar start trickling into this glass? So I just took the lid off and I started eating the banana pulp, which is very similar to eating a banana. It's like eating banana off the cob. Thank you.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Hi. This is Art, by the way. I was just going to say that I hate to call and interrupt your show these thoughts occur to me because you're always on this run and I don't want to mess up your mojo. But going back to when I'm sorry.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I do.
Don't apologize. I mean, you're a listener and, you know, if you want to talk about something else, by all means.
Well, no, it was apropos of the clip you were playing of Obama during his interview. And it's, to me, he was not on a teleprompter, clearly.
Yeah.
So he actually showed his true beliefs because the way he phrased what he said when he was talking about, you know, having meetings with world leaders close to their elections, talking about Netanyahu, and then he brought up, the English
Art,
dude, Cameron?
Can you hear me?
No.
Art.
Yes.
We're on the air in about 30 seconds. Can we bring this on the air?
Oh, okay.
Hold on just a second. I've just got an ad playing, and then we'll bring it on. But and I don't know. If I'm shouting, it's because I don't know if people can hear me when they're on the phone. So don't take it personally. I just a lot of times if people call in, they'll tell me that I'm trying to say something. They tell me they literally cannot hear me, so. Are you there?
I am, sir.
Okay, hold on just a sec. We're just about on the air. Folks, we've got a phone call here. Art is on the line, and Art has got some comments about Obama on the teleprompter versus off the teleprompter, and talking about world leaders. Art, what's your point there?
Well, when he was discussing meeting with world leaders close to when an election is taking place, and using that as his rationale for not wanting to meet with Netanyahu. Then he mentioned, what's his name, Cameron, the guy from England.
Yeah, the,
was
the,
over
the
here.
Prime Minister.
And apparently that was close to an election, but what he said was exactly, even we don't believe in doing that even with our closest allies when he was talking about England, which would obviously indicate that he does not feel that Israel is a close ally.
That's a good point.
And if you go back and listen to that, that there's nothing else you can take away from it. So off teleprompter, when he isn't perfectly scripted, he actually lets his true feelings be known.
All right, so let me ask you this. You're a person who kind of thinks, obviously, you're not just thinking about the message directly, but also kind of analyzing stuff, so you're a little more of a deep thinker. What do you believe that the president believes in general? I mean, why is there this often the sense of disconnect between the average American and the president?
Well, because I think his overall belief system, now I'm not going to say that 100% of what he believes is contrary to what the average American believes, but I would say the majority of what his belief system is diametrically opposed to what the average American thinks. So he's got his agenda, and if the American public be damned, he's going to push forward and do what he can. And yes, I do believe that he is an Islamist sympathizer.
Got to be, because just to use your theory of communications, which I think is actually the way to understand it, you don't just and they say women are better at reading communication than men because they read body, nonverbal communication. But I think that if you were to take all of the statements he ever said about Christianity and Islam and laid them down on a chart or put them up like a puzzle board, you would find that he is extremely reluctant to criticize Islam, seems to have more enthusiasm, much more identification with Islam, because he'll jump on it as a subject faster than Christianity. He's barely ever said anything about Christianity except that he is, you know, I go to Christian church. I consider myself a Christian. And, he might occasionally say Jesus said this or that. He doesn't really seem to speak the way a Christian would.
Well, that coupled with the fact that his actions, which everyone claims speak louder than words, would indicate that he always falls on the side of Islam. Now, I don't believe in that much coincidence.
Right.
So
go on.
If the way he speaks would indicate that he's, sympathetic to that religion or political system, let's say.
Yeah.
And his actions in the world would indicate that he's sympathetic to that. What else are you supposed to take away from that? Why isn't it clearly obvious to everybody what his belief system is? Why are there so many apologists, not just for him, but for Islam in general? But why do people always try to throw everything in the path of just calling a spade, and pardon the pun there, I did not mean that one.
You're just doing a little spade work there. But the thing is that, I mean, what I find amazing is this instinct of the media to always defend him, or either that they either don't say anything about these obvious incongruencies, or they defend him in a way that is so clumsy and childish. And it's exactly the way this, like the president says, well, we don't want to have Netanyahu here because there's an election coming up. we don't want to put our thumb on the scales. That's stupid. I mean, that literally is on the level of, well, Bibi Netanyahu has a peanut allergy. We don't want anyone talking to him who may have eaten a peanut in the last 12 days. It is about as believable as that. And I honestly think what I was reading about Putin, the leader of Russia, and this disinformation movement that they're doing over there, all the time putting out false information so nobody ever knows what he actually believes or what's happening in the government. I honestly believe there's got to be an element of that in some of the stuff with Obama, because so much of it doesn't make any sense.
But I would agree with you. However, it creates chaos when there's no rational thought process to follow, no discernible patterns to follow. That creates a chaotic situation in which he can further his cause. If everybody's always looking for, well, what's that? What's over here? And when he's getting you to watch his right hand while his left hand is picking your pocket.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I also believe that when it comes to, say, Netanyahu, for example, first of all, part of that whole thing with him, again, this is my belief system, is that he is such an elitist that he truly believes that if he were to meet with Netanyahu, anybody in Israel who's going to vote is going to be influenced exclusively by that action, as opposed to whatever would lead them to believe the way they do currently. So he thinks that highly of himself. And yes, I do agree that he is so narcissistic that it's nauseating, but also that Netanyahu is clearly not an Islamist. If he meets with the anti-Islam guy, what message does that send to the pro-Islamist groups?
I agree, and I think that we have to track Obama. When he got into office and he gave this great speech in 2004 before the DNC, the Democratic National Convention, he gets up and gives a speech, and he's targeted as a person who has a gift for rhetoric. Harry Reid comes up and says, you're a wonderful speaker. And instead of saying thank you, Obama says, I've got a real gift, you know, and he just agrees with them. He doesn't say thanks or anything. Then he spends 100 days in the Senate and then becomes president. So he apparently, and this is, I picked this up from some of these books called like The Amateur by Edward Klein, who said that Obama had or still has this idea that all he has to do is give a good speech and it will cause a spontaneous army of people to arise and start, taking on his ideas, which is really kind of a pathological understanding of power. I just think that he doesn't really understand the democratic process. I think he's a terrible leader in part because, but just like Howard Dean didn't see this movie, but was the first person to say, this is a movie for nut cases and Tea Party people, you know, right wingers. People who are elitists, they only think about what they believe, and anything else, they don't want to waste their time with it. They're anti-scientific. They don't study the world because they already know everything.
Well, and that's another thing, like with the movie, for example, the way they can use certain arguments to their advantage, and then when the same argument needs to be used, it's irrelevant. Which is, Obama's very big on creating these straw men, and he'll make statements that, I guess in his mind, by virtue of the fact that he makes the statement, it is now gospel truth.
Yeah.
So he will say things like, the majority of Americans have agreed that they want nationalized health care, or however he phrased it, right?
Yeah.
That is categorically untrue.
It's also
every survey has proven that is not true.
Mothership
but he says it.
Mothership to art. That is also a sign of a pathological mindset. Someone who has a mental disorder who cannot differentiate between their opinion. You know, it's like they say an infant can't differentiate between itself and the mother because it doesn't know anything else. Its only connection to the world is the mother. I almost feel like Obama has this kind of childish view of the world in which he's kind of swallowed every bit of propaganda that's ever been, you know, he's a narcissist. He's believed everything positive that's ever been said about himself. And he can't imagine, like you're saying, his statements not being true, even if they're lies, even if they're falsehoods.
Well, and that's clearly been proven repeatedly, just if you listen to him. And the fact that the movie, I heard on the radio yesterday, the day before, that it is tracking to be one of the highest grossing movies of all time.
Yeah.
Which, unless people that like the movie are going to see it 6 and 8 and 10 times each, which I doubt, that would lead me to believe that there are a lot of people who want to see this movie. And yet they sit on their side of this political equation and claim that it's garbage, that nobody would be interested, nobody would believe it. It's, so
art,
their
art,
argument of, you art, know, the majority art, of Americans,
art,
which...
Art, can you hear me? Can you hear me? Hold on a second. I just want to make one more statement that I've said a couple of times already, but I think it is so quintessential. An elitist does not have to study anything that he or she disagrees with. You hear about this movie. It's called American Sniper. You don't have to go see it to understand that it's garbage propaganda, right-wing garbage, that it's only supported by nutbags. The title of the movie itself, it reminds me of the Satanic Verses. The people who criticized the Satanic Verses, and there was a fatwa put against Salman Rushdie because the title was unacceptable. I think these elitists are absolutely crazy in their avoidance of the real world.
Well, I can't argue with you, sir.
All right,
and
Art,
I will let
Art,
you go because I made my point.
Art, yeah, Art. Anything else? I got to go to break.
No, sir. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Great call. All right, folks. All right. When you call in, just a favor, listen while you're talking. Take a breath. It's AM radio caller 101. All right. So let me give you a little bit of Nico Case here. Alt country. Nico Case is a legend. I played a little bit of her the other day. Prison Girls. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 to call in, 805-6180 to text. We'll be right back at 7:31 on the button. All right, folks, Kelly here, and appreciate the calls. Nice call, Art. Even the best calls have to end sometime, unfortunately. But all right, I wanted to throw something out to you. There are those of you who are listening who still believe in Obama, that still believe in the – you want to call it a myth? You want to call it a legend? You want to call it the promise? First black president. Remember the promises he made in the beginning he was going to be post-racial? Can anybody claim now that he was post-racial? Does anybody believe he's post-partisan, that he doesn't care which side of the aisle ideas come from? Does he listen to or does he have any tolerance of the Republican Party? Does he believe that party identification with an idea purifies it? And we have a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. This is Kelly. Who's this?
This is Deborah. I haven't released the signal, but about the ban, I think they overtalk you because there's exceptions to the rule. But the men, I'm trying to get away from the radio, not only signal. Men, like when they're behind a newspaper.
Deborah, can you hear me? None of what you initially stated could I understand. What's your point?
Okay, well, men are one-track mind. Like, he had his agenda. What do you want to say, the guy on the phone with you?
You know, there's so much feedback. I can't hear you.
Wait a minute.
Folks, if you're calling in, make sure that your radio's off, because what it does is it creates a loop in which there's an echo. All right, so anyway, here's what I'm getting at. You can accuse me of being anti-Obama bigot or whatever, but let me ask you this. Set aside your party affiliation and your desire to support minorities, whatever it is that would cause you to initially support him. Let me ask you this. When the president is off the hook, when he's off the reservation, when he's doing things on his own, how wise is he? Let's do a test of his wisdom, of his decision-making. How wise is the president? Because he's got this theory that what he wants to do to make decisions that don't go through the Congress. Now, the underlying premise there is that he's so smart, he's so right, he's got so much genius that he can't be bothered with the process because he's got immediate things that need to happen. So let me play for you here, though, a little clip on Fidel Castro. Fidel Castro said, "I don't trust the U.S., nor have I spoken with them." You know, when we do a deal in which we change a historic policy, especially with a country that we've been embargoing, we need to get something out of it. And the president has time and again shown that he doesn't understand negotiations. You don't give somebody everything they want and then complain that they didn't give you back what you needed. So check this out. And this is from Yahoo News.
Former Cuban President Fidel Castro has broken his silence. For the first time since the U.S. Former Cuban President Fidel Castro has broken his silence. For the first time since the U.S. and Cuba agreed to work on improving their diplomatic relationship, Castro shared how he felt about it. He sent a statement to the University of Havana that read,
"No confío en la política de Estados Unidos ni en intercambiar una palabra con ellos, sin que esto signifique ni mucho menos un rechazo a una solución pacífica de los conflictos o peligros de guerra."
The former leader said he supports friendly relations between countries, including Cuba's opponents. The remarks come less than a week after the U.S. and Cuba held high-level talks on how to restore political ties.
All of these leftist groups persecute and kill the homosexuals. I find it so sad that you have someone who's the head of this group now, and they would be part of that. Fidel Castro doesn't trust the president.
I'm experienced now. Professional.
He sent a letter. It does not risk represent.
Y'all been broke, been knocked down a couple times.
Rejection of peaceful conflicts.
Bad. I've done something new for this fight. I've wrestled with an alligator.
That's right.
I have wrestled with an alligator.
It is truly extraordinary the amount of human rights abuses in Cuba. So how did Obama's action to normalize relations with Cuba, how did that help America? How did it help the Cubans? How does it help the people who we would identify as being the best people in society? The political activists, the people who want more democracy, more free speech, freedom of religion, and all these things, and people who stand up against the government the way that our founding fathers did. How are those people treated over there? They are tortured. They're killed. They're incarcerated for years. How did that help those people? And the answer is it didn't. All right. There's the wisdom of the guy right there in a nutshell. He doesn't even know how to negotiate, even though he's got the most powerful hand of cards in the world. Here's a little more Brian Regan for you. Kelly O'Connell Show, 7:39.
We just moved. I called UPS to ask them to help out with some boxes. Now, they're a good service, but you have to have information ready about your boxes before you even call them. I had no idea. I called them up. "Yeah, I have 10 boxes. You come pick them up."
"We need to know the weight and the girth." "Okay, goodbye."
It's So I called back, we need the weight and the girth. Okay, I don't know what the weight is, and I don't know what girth means. So now what's the procedure? So this guy talks to me like I'm 4 years old. Well, do you have a bathroom scale? Yeah, but if I put the box on the scale, it's going to cover up the numbers. What, do I take them off really quick? Ah, zero. I'm not fast enough.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Yes, I keep getting cut off.
Deborah, I can't have somebody on the phone if there's a big echo. I'm sorry.
No, I understand. No. I was trying to get to a window. I live in a cinder block.
I understand, but what you were saying up to that point didn't make any sense either. So, there's people that are listening to this.
I talked to Bill, and he doesn't know what button to push.
I understand, but listen, Deborah, I've got to go. Call in tomorrow. Kelly here, and I'm just going to kind of round it out here with a little general stuff for you. I've got an article that I found that was interesting, and I can't remember if I mentioned this. I've had it on my list to talk about for a while. There's an article in the Independent, the UK Independent, "The Enemy Within: People Who Hear Voices in Their Heads Are Being Encouraged to Talk Back." And I found this absolutely fascinating. And the reason that I found it interesting was because the way that we do mental health in this country is disastrous, okay? And that's not meant as an insult to any of the psychologists, psychiatrists, any of the long-suffering folks who actually work with the mentally ill, who a lot of times put their lives, their health in danger. If you're dealing with people who are unstable, they can snap, they can attack. And there's a lot of, very, very kind-hearted people that are involved in the mental health industry. But the way that we do mental health in this country is, I think it really is a case of capitalism gone wrong, because you've got these giant companies that are constantly developing new medications. All right. What are they for? What are the medications for? They're to deal with symptoms. So you're a schizophrenic, you hear voices. You know, so you go into the psychiatrist or, somebody in your family. Got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this? Deborah, call back tomorrow, please, when you get your phone sorted out. All right, so we've got these people with mental health issues. They get, they have a nervous breakdown or something happens where people begin to be alarmed by them, and so they're taken into the psychologist, psychiatrist. They're given a diagnosis. Sometimes they have a nervous breakdown or they have a break with reality. They're taken in and this is normally what happens. And I mean, I've done advocacy in these situations representing the mentally ill. They bring them into a place like Memorial. And we got to do a show on Memorial again to find out if Five West is open or not. We'll have to get a hold of Ron Gurley. This is how it's done. They're taken in and the doctor gets a diagnosis of what their symptoms are. There's all kinds of different mental illnesses out there. And then they're given drugs to tamp down the symptoms. So the schizophrenic doesn't hear voices. The classic medication was lithium. And now there's all kinds of different drugs. But what is the problem with this? And this happens with all of these. There's a medication for every drug or for every malady until it stops working, and then you have to switch drugs. So a lot of these people are under a lot of different medications, and what happens is the personality is kind of repressed. The people are sedated. They seem like they're kind of half asleep all the time. They're not normal. They don't seem normal because they're under all this medication. The problem with that is whatever caused the mental health issue, the schizophrenia or whatever else, the bipolar, is never addressed. They're just kept under medication. There is no talk therapy out there anymore, except, you know, for if in some cases. Now, there's a group of people out there, according to this article, that hear voices. Now, this coincides with an article that came out, with a publication that came out that said that people who hear voices and things like that, it's a response to stress. There's stress in their life, and so their brain kind of creates these voices to help deal with the stress. And so one of the things that this article says, and it's not funny, but it just struck me as interesting. Talk back to the voices. Have a conversation with them. Talk about them. They say that's a lot more healthy and beneficial than it is to just try to ignore them, pretend they don't exist, medicate them. And so if you're diagnosed with schizophrenia in a third world country, your rate of getting healthy out of that, or getting away from the diagnosis, having it be temporary, is about 50%. Now, in the United States, you know what the rate is? 0%. Why is that? Because when a person is schizophrenic in this country, they're medicated, and it seems to, you know, to stop the progress of the disease. I mean, it kind of, you know, entombs these people in the drugs. What would be more interesting, in my opinion, and I don't claim to be a psychiatrist, but I've just seen this, and I've talked to people like Ron Gurley and some of the nurses and psychiatrists stuff. The cycle these people are on, they have a mental breakdown, they come in, they get medicated, then they're under medication, and then for a lot of them, the rest of their life, they struggle, and their family and friends, society struggles with getting them to take their medication. When they stop taking it, then they have another breakdown. They're lying in the middle of the road. They're trying to jump off bridges. They're attacking people, or they're catatonic. They're not communicating with people. They have to come in and get medicated again. And if they take their medication, they can function. So what is not dealt with is the cause. And so this society that we're in pretends that the cause of all these things is chemical. There's a chemical missing in your brain, or your brain's producing a wrong chemical. So we give you this medication to deal with that. Now, what does that get rid of? It gets rid of the person's history. And what I noticed, and what I ask all the people that I advocated for, I tried to ask every single one, were you abused as a child? I developed a theory that I've seen now. When I did some research on it, I saw that there was a number of people out there that are saying childhood abuse is so crucial to developing mental illness later. It's, you know, these kids can't deal with being sexually abused, being beaten, being abandoned. And so I think if there was more of a commitment to dealing with the causes of these mental illnesses, we would have a lot more healthy people, and we would have, you know, these drug companies would lose out on their billions of dollars industry, but it wouldn't be as profitable then. But I think we would have a mentally more healthy populace, you know, because you'd have people who are in talk therapy who are, you know, and there is talk therapy out there. I don't mean to suggest that there's not, but the number one way of dealing with mental illness in this country is to dose people, to give them medication. And I think if we tried, and there's a spiritual element here, there is a historic element, you know, the past experiences. Why two people grow up, they could be twins in the same environment. One becomes mentally ill, the other one doesn't. One becomes a criminal, the other one becomes a minister. All of this stuff is very fascinating. What drives human behavior, human decision-making is fascinating. The pharmacopoeia, the pharmaceutical industry's approach to this, I think, has been a disaster. And there's people who've been given a diagnosis by like somebody comes in, I can't sleep, I'm depressed, whatever. They're given medication. There's a small percentage of people who are put on drugs that then develop psychotic reactions. Now, almost every one of the people who goes on these shooting sprees, you know, they go to a school and shoot it up, or they go to the mall, whatever. Almost every one of these people is being seen by a psychiatrist and is taking medication. Why, if this is the answer to the problems, would that be true? How is it possible that we're dealing with this in the right way if these people all have a tendency to, you know, all of the worst case scenarios, it's like almost all of these people have already been seen, diagnosed, or being treated by a psychiatrist, and they're getting medication. How then, if this is the right way to go, would they then flip out? It doesn't make any sense. And we've got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Morning, Kelly. This is Jake.
Jake, hey, thanks for the call. What's up, buddy?
I just think that what you're talking about there, I just want to touch on that, that it started from a childhood when they diagnosed these children with ADD and all that baloney. That's the road they're on. And then when they get older, they start confronting situations like that with their in their mind, and that's where you get these shooting from.
Well, there are people, this is what happens, I think. There are people who are seriously abused to children. We can't imagine some of the things that children go through, sexual abuse, physical abuse, just a complete abandonment. Then these people have to grow up and pretend that they're able to function, and they really, a lot of these people can't. It's very tragic, and the end result I've seen in a lot of these people is bipolar or schizophrenia or whatever. I don't, you know, there's psychiatrists out there that'll tell you that schizophrenia is 100% genetic. I don't buy into that.
No, I don't buy into that either. And also, like you said, it is stems from their childhood as far as being abused or something, but then they medicate them, and medicating doesn't solve the problem.
Not at all. Anything else?
Oh, that's all. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. All right, folks, I got some weird news for you to switch gears here. China officials dine on endangered salamander. That's tragic. They have a giant salamander in a box here, in a tank. And the Chinese officials feasted on a critically endangered giant salamander and turned violent when journalists photographed the luxury banquet, according to reports from Beijing. 28 diners included senior police officials from the southern city of Shenzhen. And one of the diners said, "In my territory, it is my treat. Nothing is more delicious than sautéed salamander." Well, that's how I'm interpreting this. It's critically endangered fish. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell's show. Who's this?
Morning, Kelly. Rob.
Hey, Rob. Yeah, give it to us. What's up?
So the Cubans are saying that in order to make relations with them, we got to return Guantanamo Bay to them. Well, they never owned it. Spain owned it. We took it from Spain.
It sounds like a stain on the history, but who is Spain?
Spain.
Oh, Spain. I thought you said stain.
No, Spain.
Is that a kitten meowing in the background?
Yeah.
So Mike has his dogs, and now you got to fight back with a kitten. Very impressive.
Anyway, that's all I had to say. Right, you know, Cuba never owned Guantanamo Bay, and we took it from Spain.
Go feed that kitten some warm milk. Come on now.
All right.
I'll talk to you, Rep. Thanks a lot. Zambia's new leader drops white vice president. This is the first leader in like two decades in Africa who's been white, and they're booting this guy out of office. Zambia's newly elected president, Edgar Lungu, dropped Vice President Guy Scott, who was briefly Africa's only white leader, from his administration. And now the farmers in Zambia are in danger of losing their farms because, you know, they're white and they need to lose their property and give it to black people. All right. Dallas teen faces murder charge. A 14-year-old girl was looking after a baby and drowned it. Now, there was another. This is a young African-American girl. Her mother's baby. It was her mother's baby. And or it was a friend of the family anyway. The mother was in jail, and she saw this report come on TV. She was in there for traffic tickets. She's watching on TV, and they're doing a story about her baby being drowned by this 14-year-old girl. It's amazing. Now, there's another girl who took her newborn baby and laid it in a road and poured gasoline on it and lit it on fire. I think that was in Philadelphia. It's so bizarre. I don't know if I mentioned that one. Here's a little bit more weird news. I've been wanting to tell you this one for so long. The Nazis developed a breed of cows, and a farmer in Devon, he imported them, the descendants of super cows bred by Nazi Germany, to reduce the size of he had to reduce the size of his herd. Why? Because they're like any Nazis, they were too belligerent. And he said, the ones we had to get rid of would just attack you any chance they could. They would try to kill anyone. Dealing with that was not a lot of fun at all. The formidable beasts were created in the 1930s by German brothers Heinz and Lutz Heck, which may be where the phrase what the heck came from. And they were zoologists commissioned by the Nazi hierarchy to bring back something resembling an Auroch, a type of European wild bull, which had become extinct in the 1600s. Now, maybe President has got some of this bloodline, because he seems to have a lot of wild bull, too. But the Aurochs had a mythical status for the Nazis, and the program was a success. They bred these critters, but they're just like typical Nazis. They just could not be contained. And the farmer said, since they have gone, it's all peaceful again. Well, at least we tried. Here, we'll take you out with some Nico Case. Have a great day. Meet you back in 22 hours. Kelly O'Connell Show. Ciao.
Through the blades of a fan, I love your long shadows and your gunpowder eyes. I love your long shadows and your gun.